Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, and welcome back to the 90 Day Fiancé Wrap Up, aka the Hot Mess Express of podcasting, where every week we get together and we talk about all things 90 Day Fiancé, all the families, the couples, the children, cutscenes, all of it. No odd stone left unturned here. I am your host and conductor, Puya Zanvakili, ready to discuss all of these things in great detail, greater than they need to be. And, of course, I'm not alone. I've got an amazing year with me to cover what has been deemed the finale of Happily Ever After. But for today, I've got Mina to talk through it all with me. Mina, how are you doing?
I am doing pretty good. Yeah, this finale, I guess, didn't feel very final. We didn't even get to see Paul and Karini, but I guess we have some stuff to talk about, so...
I forgot about Paul and Karini completely. He just brought it up.
Yeah, and they also didn't show them on the preview for next week, so I wonder if there's something weird going on there. But yeah, I feel like that's part of the reason why it didn't feel very final, because we didn't really see a whole lot besides the wedding for the most part.
Right. Yeah, I can't say that with regards to Paul and Karini, it's been a couple of months now where I remember seeing an article that they're like done, but it got really messy with like law enforcement and stuff, so I have a feeling they're just moving past them.
Yeah, it's probably, there are probably too many legal issues going on where TLC is probably trying to just break ties with that and just let them figure it out on their own.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, let's just remove our involvement with this altogether, probably.
Exactly.
So the finale's here. We have not one couple, but we have the rest of them to talk about. Mina, since it's been a minute since you've been back, I would love for you to take the honors. Pick which couple you want us to dive through first today.
All right. Yeah. So the episode started with Larissa and Eric. I think that was the same as the last time I was on. So should we just start there?
Might as well. So Larissa and Eric-y, you know, last time we saw them, Larissa had her surgery. That was the entire storyline of theirs. So What happens here, Mina? Well, what's going on with them in this episode?
Yeah, so it's the day after her surgery. Mm-hmm. They're about to go to this 24-hour appointment. Larissa, she does not look well. She just went through pretty serious procedures. I can just imagine if I was in her state, I would not want to be on camera, but everybody's different, you know? And then Eric is going through, last night I had to ice her face all night. It was so awful. I barely slept. And then he says something kind of weird too. He's like, this is 24 hours after. And he's like, I haven't thought about sex at all. It's like, oh, that's probably a good thing. And she's not really capable of consenting right now, so let's probably keep it that way. They're just getting ready for this appointment, and Larissa just is not looking great, still in the same pajamas and just getting ready to go see this creepy doctor again.
Oh my God. Okay. So I'm very happy that A, you left it there for me to jump in, and B, that we have the exact same notes. Cause I also have, the doctor is ... kind of creepy. So So everything you said reigns true for what's been going on. I also would not consent to be on TV looking in that state, but different people, different things. Like, you know, I think Larissa's fine with it. She knows what the end product's going to be for her, so she's okay with it. Mm-hmm. I do like that Eric-y's kind of been helping out, but also I do like that he's making it seem like he's such a martyr and it's only been 24 hours. Like, later on...
Tonight.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he had one rough night. I mean, if this was going on for like weeks, months, okay, maybe I'll feel some sympathy, but come on, dude. She had some serious surgery. What did you expect?
Again, he does not seem like the type of guy that does his research, and that is a detriment to anybody who does not know how to deal with someone who has just come out of surgery. Mm-hmm. But 24 hours, and to be like, I haven't thought about sex for 24 hours, like, man, what a champion. Like, you really want a pat on the back for that one, huh?
Right, 50 gold stars.
Yeah, seriously. But, yeah, so the creepy doctor. So the doctor walks in, and he's like, oh, this is my new nurse. I didn't write her name down. We call her the Mighty Mouse because whatever, whatever. That's fine. That was weird, but like not creepy.
Right.
But then when he's describing Larissa, I just feel like, I don't know. I mean, I know that he's her doctor, but to me, it was still very creepy the way he was talking about her.
Agreed. Yeah. He describes her boobs as round, high, and sexy, and then says that her nipples, or however he describes them, he says that they are now quarters instead of the big silver dollars that she had before.
Yeah.
Is he a doctor?
Mina, ever since Friday, every podcast I've been on, there's been some conversation about nipples. And it's not been great for me. If you follow the Big Brother podcast, you know what I'm talking about. But
yes.
I feel like a doctor should not be allowed, like, shouldn't be allowed to say the word sexy while at work. Like, if you've got office hours as a doctor, I feel like sexy probably isn't the word you should be using in the room.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think there's a medical term for sexy, but I think that even then you should probably be withholding.
Right. He could have just simply said they look great. He didn't have to go into all these describing terms that I guess somebody like Larissa, because he kind of said similar things when she was more conscious last visit, and she didn't really seem to care because that's why she's getting the surgery, is because she wants to look like a sexy doll or whatever she wants to do. Yeah. So I guess she wouldn't really care, but I could see how some patients might think that's a little odd. So I wonder if this is just like on camera, he's trying to act like, he's trying to play the role of the plastic surgeon, or if this is really how he is.
Yeah. I remember the last visit he had with the doctor. He was also kind of like being weird there too. But yeah, ultimately I just think the choice of words, not great, but I guess like if he's a doctor who knows he's going to be on reality TV, he's kind of like playing it up to the cameras. I thought that's possibly something that could be happening as well. Yeah, ultimately can't say that I've ever had a doctor that spoke like that ever. Right. I did have I had a doctor visit. It was last summer. So I went in, and the doctor was clearly like maybe a little bit older than me, and he said "fam" to me, and that was the weirdest thing that's ever happened. I was like, "You're a doctor. You can't be saying fam to me." It was a little weird.
He's hip. He's cool with the kids. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, fam, we got to get that out right away. And I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Why are you saying fam? It's so uncomfortable.
You should have just been like, all right, bro.
Yeah, all right, bro, I got you. Cool, sounds good. Okay, so then the next time we see Larissa and Eriki in this episode is it's been a while since the surgery. They have friends coming over to visit Larissa post-surgery. Eriki's sitting outside on the patio chilling, and the friends come through and they are losing their mind. Larissa, you know, sitting there, she's got like, was it like jean shorts and a bikini, not a bikini, but a swimsuit?
Some pieces of fabric, yes.
There we go. Pieces of fabric. Basically, she's had the surgery, she's healed, and now is time to put the results on display.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was just thinking this whole time, how would I react if my friend did this? And I feel like it would be similar to like if you're taking a kid to a birthday party and you want to go there, you want to see what the vibe is, and you want to like observe what's going on, but you don't really care all that much. So I feel like that's how I would be. I'd be like, oh, cool, but this is all about you. Who really truly cares? But her friends seem to care a little bit. So yeah, and then Eric makes some more strange comments, and they kind of both do, because they say that they are not currently sleeping in the same bed. They share a room but not a bed, like two cats, which is okay, I guess every living situation is different. But Eric is also at the same time complaining still now, because it's after the 24 hour mark. Now he can think about sex more. So now he's complaining that it's still not enough. And they're just, they're friends. I feel like to be friends with these people, you have to, on some level, understand that you're just going to hear the most ridiculous things. And they prove this right when they have this big reveal meeting.
Absolutely. And I do think that with these, with this couple specifically, whatever they have works for just them. Because remember, none of her friends liked Eric to begin with. So it somehow works for them. I mean, I feel like the minute you have two separate beds in the same room and that's your living arrangement, something's kind of gone awry. I don't know what it is. Because the way she like enthusiastically said, yes, we are having more sex. And he was like, not enough. To me, I was like, I don't even know if you guys are, I think one of you's lying and I can't decide which one is lying.
This has been a complaint. Either Eric or Larissa has been complaining about this topic ever since we knew that they were a couple. Mm-hmm. So it's at this point. Okay, if you guys are going to keep talking about it, what are you guys going to do about it? And you should probably figure that out personally. You don't have to share it with everybody.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and the thing is with Larissa's friend. So the one, there was one that she stayed with for a little while, who's, again, her name has escaped me. And there was
Carmen.
There we go. Carmen. So she, you can tell, is a little bit more skeptical, but Hannah is very optimistic about their living arrangement. It's like, hey, that's weird to me, but if it works for them, it works for them. I'm saying it's not working for them, and we'll find out the fallout of this when we get to the tell-all. Which, by the way, Mina, three-part tell-all.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I wonder if it's like a full 6-hour tell-all, or like 2 1-hours and a 2-hour. I don't know, but hopefully they have good material to fill it and not just Angela yelling at her camera.
Yeah, I can't go through another like 2-part tell-all with Angela just hogging all the camera time. No, I do think that 3 parts is excessive, especially when we're talking about how this finale was kind of lackluster and they were kind of reaching for content. So this is clearly the pandemic is done. Not done, sorry, the pandemic has halted us, so we need to stretch all our content. And now that with, you know, the fact that they delayed The Other Way for a minute, I do think that the tell-all is kind of going to be, I would predict it's going to be closer to the 6 hours, oddly enough, potentially, because they just seem like they're trying to squeeze out the time. I will be impressed if they can get 6 hours, though. I would expect it to be more of a 3 1-hour slot, potentially.
Yeah. Well, so for, I think it was before the 90 days, the first one that they did, the Zoom tell-all, there was somebody leaked like 10 hours of that footage from, like, they filmed like 2 separate days. And it was the second day that they leaked like 10 hours of footage for. And I mean, come on, I'm a live feed watcher. I did sit there and watch most of it. And I can say that from that, it looks like they have a lot of material that they can probably spread out. I just don't know how repetitive it's going to be after a while. Even just this season alone has been a little repetitive with the storylines. So I can only imagine that the finale or the tell-all will maybe be not the most exciting, but there should be some drama in store.
Yeah, I agree. We also managed to track down that 10-hour and watched it. It did get dull really quick. Because like the prospect of, hey, uncensored tell-all, yes, please. All the content we can take, yes, please. But then it did get repetitive. So we'll see what it does for this season, what they do for this season. But I'm excited to find out. I always dread the tell-all episodes, and then I get very excited when they start. So I'm here to get some questions answered. I'm always here for that.
Definitely.
Okay. So that covers Larissa's story, I believe. So then let's just jump into the cult section, because I still put them two as the same pick anyway. So Colt is, you know, last time we saw him, he was working out with his rent-a-buddy Steve, and he decided that, hey, I'm going to confront Debbie about letting me be a man and like leaving my affairs out of her like affairs or whatever. So he's ordered takeout for them and he got vegan mac and cheese. Okay. So immediately watching this, Liana turned to me and said, who is he trying to impress? So I need to ask you, because seemingly we know he's not a vegan. We know he's not a vegan. Debbie's not a vegan.
Right.
Why would he order vegan mac and cheese out of nowhere, unprompted?
That's a great question. I feel like Cole always just confuses me because he likes to paint this image of himself, I feel like, but we all see straight through it. So mm-hmm. I think maybe he's trying to, I feel like everything with Cole probably boils down to he's just trying to get some more girls that he could text and good morning, my, you know, so yes. That's all I can boil it down to. And of course, Debbie can't even pronounce vegan. She's like, vegan, gin? Yeah. No, Debbie, everything is not gin. I know you like gin, but it's just not involved here.
Yeah. And he says that it tastes like potato, not cheese or mac, which I'm willing to bet some of those coins inside that slot machine that Colt doesn't know that mac is short for macaroni.
Oh, yes, I would be on the same side with you.
So Colt is now talking to Debbie and he's talking about how he needs his privacy. That's why he's not opening up to her and that, you know, it's just like he needs her not to really meddle in his affairs. And the whole time it sounded to me, and this is really awkward, it sounded to me like he was breaking up with her in a way.
Yes. Yeah, I literally have that in my notes. I have Debbie and Cole have a weird discussion, like a breakup. Yeah, it very much seemed like he was trying to act like she's more into him than he is into her. Mm-hmm. And that it just needs to be done. Yeah, it was very much a breakup. And at the end of it, it just left me confused. And also we found out some very revealing things about their relationship and their dynamics. Like Debbie makes his bed and washes his clothes for him.
All of it. She does all
Yeah. Yeah. How old is Colt? Like 35?
That's probably
alarming. Yeah, I guess I get why he wants his mom to live with him still, because I mean, who wouldn't want that? But at the same time, come on, man, like you're trying to find a girl out there with your good morning texts and you're going to make them do your laundry. You have to do these things yourself, man, at some point.
Yeah, if I'm doing your laundry, cooking your food, making your bed, like if I'm taking care of you like that, yes, I want more information. But weirdly enough, I'm on Debbie's side a little bit.
Yeah.
But like, I think they just both let it go too far along the path where now he's trying to blame, like she completely clocks him. He's trying to blame all of this on her. And then he's trying to act like she is the reason why he's having these issues, which I think it's a 100% 50-50 situation.
Right.
And he says, you treat me the way these women treat me. He wants a friendship with his mom. And then like Debbie looks away because she's getting irritated. He's like, please look at me when I'm talking to you. I love you. Please hold my hand. Like,
no.
Don't give me yikes on TV.
And then
all I got was big yikes energy from all this.
Yeah. And I feel like this was it's probably all brought on because the general consensus in the 90 Day fandom is that Colt and Debbie's relationship is a little, it's not quite a mother-son, but it's not quite, as far as we've seen, like a romantic thing. It's kind of like in between. So I feel like he's probably been hearing for the last couple of years that he's been on TV, like, man, come on, get away from your mom. This is a bit much. So I wonder if he's just trying to please the audience by kind of doing this, or if he is actually really serious when he wants to distance himself a little bit from Debbie. And I also wonder if it's mostly just due to the whole Jess situation and him just trying to find something or somebody to blame for that.
Yeah, I do think that this is what, like him and Jess separated at this point, maybe 2-3 episodes ago. This is the only storyline that could have been left in. So I feel like if I'm Colty, that's the one avenue I can go toward doing something. You know, like, I do agree with you. It's kind of a rebranding for him because he's like, oh, look at me working out. I'm looking out for myself. I'm eating vegan mac and cheese, y'all. I'm like,
man.
Like, yeah, I'm trying to put in the work. and now I'm going to separate from my mom and I want to be my own person. And, you know, more people will be drawn towards me, which I feel like the problem is that for the last couple of relationships he's had, Debbie's been one of the things that the partner has complained about, that Larissa complained about, that Jess complained about. So he thinks that's the solution when in fact it is a 50-50. I love that Debbie said it'll be a cold day in hell before I wash his clothes again, because he's going to have a rude awakening when he realizes that just saying leave me alone doesn't mean that all the other stuff will magically, you know, improve with it. He has to put in work, and we'll see how much work he's going to put in.
Yeah, definitely.
So ultimately, that's all I have on Colt here. And Debbie, is there anything you wanted to talk about with regards to these two?
No, we only saw that one scene of them, which is also kind of why this didn't feel like a finale, because it was just like them having this one conversation and then that's it.
Exactly.
No nice little bow on top, but no, that's what 90 Day Fiance does to us sometimes. So I guess we just have to accept it.
Yeah. So I want to, for the next one, I would like to go to my shortest notes, AKA three bullet points. Cause I figure let's keep the bigger ones for, you know, later in. Let's just get Tanya and Sinjin out of the way, honestly.
Sounds good.
So basically, the last time we saw Tanya and Sinjin, they were having drinks with Sinjin's two buddies, one of which said, you're very controlling. Can you admit you're controlling? And the other one said, change doesn't happen overnight, yo. And then they tried to take bets, of course. But so it's the day after. And apparently they're leaving today. So I thought the timeline was very interesting here, that they're leaving the day after a night of drinking and fighting. So obviously, as can be expected, Sinjin is not looking forward to moving back to cold-ass Connecticut, as he puts it. And his sister says probably the dumbest line of the episode, surprisingly enough, which is, this feels like the first time you left and now you're leaving again. It's like, well, yeah, that's how leaving works. You know, it's sad.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ultimately, his family does not think this relationship will last. And that's all I have in my notes. I mean, obviously, we can dive into like a little bit of like what were the conversations entailing. But to me, Mina, this has just been a roundabout with them every time, which is Tanya says, now that we're together, we have expectations of what direction we want to go. I have expectation of what I want to do as a couple. So the commitment, this is where it kicks in. I expect you to be working. I expect you to be doing this and that. Whereas Sinjin's like, the walls are closing in on me. I didn't sign up to just be locked into something. I need to have more freedom. Yada, 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 yada.
Yeah, that was really all it was. They had that conversation where they were eating ice cream or whatever by the beach. And that conversation was just very strange, because it seemed at first that Sinjin was trying to say, hey, maybe we aren't going to work because I want to stay here. But then he kind of pivots as soon as she says that, oh, I'm already struggling to hold on to you, and the plan was always for you to come to the US and us to make money. Yeah. And then it's just like, okay, yeah, I'll be on the plane tomorrow. All right. Well, thanks for that conversation. So it seems like I see when I look at Sinjin, I can tell that he is a South African, not like he looks like he's South African, but he looks like he's made to be there, because when he's there, he just feels so at home. And you can tell that like he is just in his element. Whereas when we've seen him in the US, we've just seen him sitting on the couch, drinking a beer, stealing Tanya's mom's whiskey. Like it doesn't seem like he's peak Sinjin in the US. So I definitely get what he is saying and what she's saying, but this is just the same conversation that they've had over and over and over. And I would like for them to just come to a decision, and then let's just put it aside, and then you guys can create some more drama for us to watch if you do come back for another season.
I do think there's two types of people in this world. There's one type of person who thrives in a specific environment, and then there's a person who, doesn't matter what environment you put them into, they will find a way to thrive in that environment. And yeah, Sinjin is the first one. Sinjin in South Africa is under control. He knows exactly what's going on here. He's like, like you said, it is his element, and he's been living there so long that he feels like, this is home. I know what to do here. Whereas he's a fish out of water in the US. He doesn't know how to function there. I feel like he feels very, you know, alone. And yeah, he doesn't seem like the type of guy that's been despite the fact that, you know, he's a bartender. So this is him being social is supposed to be one of his strong suits. I feel like in the States, he feels like he's caged and he can't. Mm-hmm. So while I definitely see his problem and I see what the issue is, I do think that the solution is just deal with it, man. You'll like that'll eventually fix itself. Like you will have your new support circle again. You will have your new, you know, friendships, activities. You know, we'll talk about Osuelo in a bit. Like that guy found volleyball. You know, you'll find your new passion. Like there's so many hobbies out there. So many things you'll be doing. It'll be fine. But for him, he equates that loneliness to like the I'm contained. I can't do what I want to do. The world is falling apart. But it's a partnership. You have to work through. You have to get through.
Right. Yeah. And just with their storyline, thinking back in their last couple seasons, when they're in South Africa, we saw them interacting with his entire family, his friends. And then when they're in Connecticut, it's just like her mom, her sister's husband, and that's it. So it does seem like it is very different, but I feel like he needs to kind of take it upon himself a little bit and branch out. There's got to be other people. I mean, it is Connecticut, but at the same time, there's got to be other people that are interested in at least some of the things he's interested in. Or maybe if he pursued one of those occupations that he was talking about last season, the opera singing or firefighter or whatever else he said, then he might find some friends and feel more at home. But I feel like this trip to South Africa just kind of solidified in his mind, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. I have to find a way to get back here. So I'll be curious to see with the tell-all where they're at now and how he feels about that. I can imagine he's probably still going to want to go back to South Africa, but I guess at this point, I would hope that he's a little bit more adjusted after coming back.
Yeah, I would hope so too. And real quick, before we proceed to the next pick, what is, if you were stopping by an ice cream truck or just walking by an ice cream place and you're getting two scoops of ice cream, what are your two choices? Ooh.
So I was always a chocolate chip cookie dough person growing up. Okay. So I would probably have to go with that. And then also I feel like I need some chocolate thrown in there. Some like real chocolate, not just chocolate chips, but probably not just like a plain chocolate. But probably because you have the cookie. This is a tough question. I feel like I would do chocolate chip cookie dough on the bottom. And then the top would be chocolate so that the chocolate could melt down on the cookie dough. And then it's the ultimate ice cream.
Yeah, I am. So I asked this because I do not like mint in chocolate.
I don't either.
Yeah. So the minute St. John said that, well, you ruined your order. My personal opinion, of course. But no, for me, I'm very basic with my ice creams. I go with a chocolate or a vanilla, but then when I say chocolate, all the greater chocolate choices are there. Like a double chocolate is there, cookie dough is there, Rocky Road is there. Like if it's got chocolate involved remotely, I'm involved. So long as it stays in that family. Once we go into the mint side of things, I'm out. If there's like a chocolate and fruit mixture, I'm out. So yeah.
Yeah, I feel like fruit and ice cream, it's like. Yes, we know that fruit is good for you. You should eat fruit. But I feel like it's kind of like, it's ice cream, man. Like, why are you eating fruit for? Like, let's have fun. Let's eat some chocolate. Yeah. That's how I feel about ice cream. So no,
for me, it's like, it's ice cream time. It's fruit time, I will sit down and eat the fruit separately in its natural form, the way it, you know, started. I don't need it to be like I don't need that crossover event in my life. I'm fine.
Exactly.
So where do you want to go next?
Ooh, let's see. So should we, to get the sadness out of the way, go with Angela and Michael?
Yes, I think that's the right choice there. So take it away with Angela and Michael.
Yeah, so last time they got married and then Skyla calls and Mama's unresponsive, which is very sad. Of course, Angela wants to get home right away, even though they just got married. So it kind of put a little bit of a damper on their wedding night and all that. But I mean, it's her mom. She's got to prioritize her. Let's see. So they go to the airport. So my favorite game to play whenever I see Angela on screen is what's in her bra. So on the way to the airport, it looks like she has like her paperwork, her passport, her boarding pass. There's probably a packet of cigs shoved deep down in there somewhere. But they get to the airport, and there's little flashes of Angela and Michael that make me think, you know what, they are actually a decent couple. And this airport scene was kind of one of them, because you could tell that Michael, he wasn't being like, oh no, I don't want you to leave. Oh, like, he was letting her do what she felt was best. Mm-hmm. They had their hugs, they had their kisses. Clearly neither of them wanted to separate, but it was necessary. So yeah. And then Angela gets home, and I remember seeing back when this happened in real time that Angela got married, and like, it felt like right after that we learned that her mom died in real life. So my concern this whole time is like, oh my gosh, is she going to get home before her mom dies? Because that would be absolutely tragic. No matter how much people may dislike Angela, nobody deserves that. But she does end up getting home before something happens to her mom. And that's nice. But then after, you can tell that she's just very torn up about it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, and for, you know, for all the negative things I've had to say about Angela throughout these podcasts, obviously this is a real life, real human moment. And you know, to lose a loved one, let alone like one of your parents, is hard no matter who you are. And the fact that she was, you could tell she was already, you know, harboring some guilt before the wedding. The fact that she had even gone to Nigeria to do this while her mom was sick. Mm-hmm. It would have been tragic if she had not gone to see her mom beforehand. And honestly, that's all I really wanted to see in this segment, because I also knew that that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Just so to find out that she had a good 10 days before it happened, I'm happy at least that happened. For some closure, for you know, getting a goodbye. And Michael handled this perfectly. He kind of, you know, completely let her take control of this. And I do think, here's my thing, Mina, is I think they're a great couple when they're not, you know, when she's not ready to like take him out and get mad at him for every little thing he does. Yeah. They're amazing in every other facet when that's not happening.
Yeah, as long as there are no women around, and as long as she can have a baby, and as long as all these other things are okay, then they're a great couple. But then when you think about the complexity of the relationship, it becomes not so great. But in this scene, in this episode, Michael was very supportive, even when she calls him later and talks about how her grandkids are missing, her mom. He was just very supportive, and you didn't see Angela yell or get upset, which in that moment you can just imagine that any little thing would have set her off. So I feel like to Michael, he probably knows that he did a good job with that.
Yeah, just Michael's, you know, he's a patient guy. And we've known this for many seasons at this point. Yes. He's a patient guy. He knows that, you know, in life, some things go right, some things go wrong. You just have to deal with them as they come along and be patient. So last week, Angela talked about how the application process will hopefully take 6 months. And I was like, that's not how that works. There's no way it'll happen in 6 months. But again, Michael, logical. He says minimum 10 months, maximum 18 months, which is the right timeline. It's about a year for the spousal visa to go through. So now they're waiting on that. And she needs him for the emotional support. And that is something that I did sympathize with her, because her daughter was talking about how Angela is reserved and tries to not show emotion. I think it comes with the fact that she's kind of the head of the household. She's been the head of the household for so long that she doesn't want to show weakness, because she doesn't want her family, like, she wants her family to feel like they can lean on her during hard times. And to show emotion would be to show weakness to her. So I think the one person she's willing to be vulnerable with is Michael. And I don't think she's capable of doing that in a digital sense. I think she needs him like up close and personal.
Right. Yeah. And you can kind of see throughout her scenes in this episode that she kind of has a couple moments where she starts tearing up a little bit and she needs a second. So you can tell that she's actively working to try to compress her emotions, which I totally understand. Everybody grieves differently. So I totally understand her doing that, because she has I don't even know how many grandkids she has living in her house, like six. So yeah, she has to be there for them. They're all obviously upset about it still. She talked about how they would sit in her bed and stuff. And it just is very, a very tragic situation. And I think that she is handling it as best as she can. And Michael has been there as her rock, which is awesome. I'm glad that she has him in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that as always, based on what we're seeing on the next time on, they're going to have an explosive tell-all. And the one scene we are shown is that Michael kind of brings up the idea of having a child like through another woman, and Angela's losing her mind and her computer's like flying over to the other side of the room.
Her cloth thing that she has over her face mask, quote unquote, is like falling all over the place. I don't understand that situation at all.
She's the only person in the entire reunion that's wearing a mask. And I say the word mask loosely.
Yes.
And it's under her nose the entire time. And it's like, I don't get why you are wearing it. Is she not home? Is she somewhere else? Like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll explain it, but they probably won't, because I remember last time when I think that guy's name was Jeffrey that just randomly wasn't at the reunion. They were just like, yeah, he's not here. So we're probably going to see that same kind of explanation for wherever Paul and Karini are, and for whatever reason why Angela's wearing a face mask. So it will probably just be the mystery that we'll always just be wondering. We'll need Detective Debbie on the case.
Oh my God. Yeah. Detective Debbie will figure everything out with the snap of a finger.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Debbie's clapbacks on the reunion. I beg someone thinks that they're smart enough to go toe to toe with Debbie at the reunion. I need a mad Debbie. That'll be so much.
Yeah. And I feel like Angela, at the last few reunions that she's been at, she's been the one that's like the most, I guess, for lack of a better term, physically violent. So it's going to be interesting to see that translate to her being in her home or wherever she is on Zoom. So I can very much see like a Debbie Angela showdown or something. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a little excited for it.
Mm-hmm. Same. I need, that would be a fun versus battle that I'll be here for. Yes. All right. So before we go on to the next couple, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's just continue where we left off. So we have two couples left here to talk about. We've got Elizabeth and Andre, and we've got Kalani and Aswil. I would like to go the Kalani and Aswelu side, because I think their story is also probably a little more sad than the Elizabeth and Andre. And after we get through the sadness, I want to just go off in the last one.
Sounds great.
So let's go with them. So here's the thing with Kalani and Aswelu. So where we left off with them, they had that big family dinner where Lo was there. Kalani's mom was there, and then Aswelu's mom and sisters were there. So the ultimate ending of that was Aswelu's mom apologizes for everything, and his sister does not. His sister refuses. Tammy refuses to apologize to Kalani for stuff that went down in Washington. And now they're going to go. So they said that we're going to go pick up his family to take him to the airport. But then we see that they got an Uber for the family to take them to the airport. So they essentially went to say goodbye is what happens here. And his mom is like a different person at this point. She's like very apologetic, very happy that Kalani came by with the kids to say goodbye. We find out that Tammy rudely, might I add, left earlier in the morning without a goodbye, didn't want to have the face-to-face. So she's already gone. Yeah, what were your thoughts about this whole like farewell with the family here?
Yeah, so it was a little bit confusing when they were like, we're going to take her to the airport. And then that poor Uber driver just shows up with all these cameras and all these people just standing waiting for him. It's like, all right, well, here's your moment. We're filming you doing your job. Don't mess it up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Tammy left early, which I guess it is rude of her to do that. At the same time, it's like, if she was there, it could have either gone peaceful and it could have been a nice goodbye, or we could have had round three of this little brawl, I guess, that they're having.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a good thing. They can just call her later, or she'll probably not call them. But Tammy has just, I just don't care. Tammy, the entire time she's been on the screen, our screens, she hasn't really shown us anything great except for her attacking Kalani over and over and over. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of glad to not see that this time. And then the mom was very nice. She thanked them for bringing the kids, told Kalani to take care of Osuelo and the kids, which she could have just said her kids. She didn't need to specify Osuelo there. Mm-hmm. And then the mom makes a joke that she needs money. I have to wonder, I had a lot of thoughts because there are several scenarios. She could have, this could have just been straight up a joke. I need money. Ha ha ha. Very funny. We joked about this. She could have been slightly serious and then saw the reactions and like, oh, just kidding. Or this could have just been completely staged. And yeah, it could be any of those options. And I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest.
Which camp are you in? Which one do you feel like, if you're answering with your gut, what's your gut telling you? Which one of these was it really?
When I rewatched it, their reactions seem a little staged in a way. So I kind of fall in under the camp of this was kind of just a nice little thing that production had them do. Either that or the mom actually thought she might get money, but if she was prepared for them to not really like that idea, so she was prepared to laugh it off anyway.
Yeah. So the mom's reaction, I don't know, like it just felt, that scene felt so awkward to me. Mm-hmm. Because the way she asks it comes off very genuine, right? So either she's like level 100 acting in that one line she delivered, but then those two looking at each other was very cringy. I feel like they were like amping it up and acting on it. And then, yeah, then she was, why are you guys looking at each other? And then she says, I was kidding. I'm more of the camp of, I think that she kind of threw it out there knowing I can just cop it out as a joke because we just talked about this. But let me see if in the future, if I ask for money, what's the reaction now that we're like all of this is said and done? But also, it could have very much just been a joke, and you know, she's found her sense of humor, because I do think that Swellu's mom has definitely in the last two episodes seems a lot more calm and a lot more grateful just to have her son and her grandkids in her life. So,
yeah, and I wonder if it's her just coming to Utah and seeing how they live, but they only showed them interacting a couple times when his mom was in Utah. But mm-hmm. I have to imagine that they probably interacted more than that. So it might just be like seeing his life in Utah and seeing the reality of it. And maybe she noticed that, yeah, Kalani's parents are the ones that are supplying this nice house for them and probably cars and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, there does seem like there was a pretty big shift in the mom, obviously not in Tammy though. But if they would have, when she says, I need some money, if they would have given her $100, she would have taken it. So, So even if she says she was joking, there is probably a little bit of truth there.
I think so. I think there's definitely always going to be a little bit of truth there with us, well, as mom.
Yeah.
So then this was the first scene we got from them. The second scene we get from them in this episode is where they are having a date night. So Kalani's mom has the kids. So they're going out for a date night. They order their bevs. Life's good. They get food. Osuelo says, what did you order? Nachos. So she gives him a piece. He bites into a jalapeno and has the biggest reaction to jalapeno I've ever seen, which is fine. And then when their waiter comes back, she says, oh, can we have two pens and a piece of paper? And the waiter, you know, obliges. And she wants to do their therapy homework right then and there. Osuelo gets a little bit mad and he's like, homework is for home, not for cocktail place, which I thought was hilarious. And
not wrong.
I mean, this is the truth. So here's the thing. I think doing the homework is healthy. I think if they had talked about it prior, like, oh, well, we can do it together. Sure. But if you're saying that we've decided to leave the kids with mom to go have a date night, doing the homework here is the worst possible thing you can do. Because this is just, you're supposed to spend time together and have the quality time together, rekindle the love together. I feel like you leave the homework for a later date.
Yeah, exactly. And this was only like a 10-minute exercise, so they could have done this at any point. I mean, he works part-time. She doesn't work. They probably are together quite a bit. So yeah, they could have definitely done this some other time, but yeah, him saying no homework in a cocktail place, that definitely got a little giggle out of me.
Yeah. Yes. The homework is like a 10-minute assignment. So basically it's, you write one name on the left, one name on the right, and then you write down what you think the household duties are for each person. And then you compare notes. So the way that Swelu writes it essentially reads out to, he does his stuff. So his laundry, his dishes, he does cleaning outside. And then she does her stuff and the kids. That, at least that's how it's going to come off to Kalani. This upsets Kalani, obviously, because she's like, well, you're basically saying that your chores are yours, but then mine are everything with the kids and myself. And he's like, she was like, what I want is for the tasks to be 50-50. Like, well, the stuff I have on my list, you do them sometimes, I do them sometimes. And he's like, well, I do the backyard, I clean the apples. And she's like, I don't care about the apples at all. I'd rather you help inside the house. And he's like, but I got to make it neat. And she's like, you raking apples does nothing for my life. And this gets a moment of, so as this is going as well, by the way, ever since she's mentioned that they're going to do this, they're going to do this task, Oswaldo kind of sounds aggressive in a way. And he looks sort of irritated, but at the same time, he's playing ball. He's definitely being, you know, compliant. He's explaining everything. He's like, anything she's saying, he's willing to, what's the word I'm looking for? Compromise and be like, okay, you got it. I want to work with you. And then he says the sweetest line ever uttered by a 25-year-old father of two. You are the pineapple of my life.
So, yeah. If you're not telling that to Liana on a daily basis by now, then I'm a little disappointed in you.
Exited to her since this episode. It's already happening. Oswaldo's taught me a lot.
Good. Take your lessons from Oswaldo. What can go wrong? I'm actually slightly proud of Oswaldo in a way that he actually did what he was supposed to do for this assignment, because I fully expected him to just write like an X through the paper because he just seems like that kind of guy. But yeah, his list is very like, I take care of myself and my clothes and my dishes and my stuff, and you take care of yourself and the boys. So while it's not the worst thing he could have put down, it's also not the best. So, and later on, when they have this big red screen of death that Kalani is sending Oswaldo away, it seems like this has not gotten much better for them, because if it was, I don't think that she would be so upset about everything going on with him. So it's a nice conversation and they seem to be getting along okay here, but there's also drinks and nachos involved, so I don't really blame them. But then it just goes downhill with the next scene.
Yeah. So the next scene is 3 months later. So they completely give him 3 months later, and here's what happened. So it's 3 months later, coronavirus, COVID-19 has happened, has reached the United States, has reached the state of Utah, and it's caused more strain to the relationship than good. And we find out why. So basically, the gist of it is Oswaldo is kind of neglecting, you know, the guidelines, neglecting the quarantine, and is going out, playing volleyball, doing his activities as if nothing's going to happen. Okay. And Kalani's mad about this because they have two children. They have to be safe. And he is neglecting these two. So then what she does is she puts a tracker in his phone, finds out that, oh, you went to play volleyball, and kind of catches him in a lie, because she asks him where he was. He says, he just went for like a spin around the block and like for a drive. Not the case. So based on all this, she's so irritated. She books him a one-way ticket to go to Washington to stay with his mom while all this is happening. And it sounds like, so I agree with you that he did good in the exercise at the restaurant with like listening and agreeing to do stuff and actually going through the motions and talking compromise. Very good. A+ lip service, because by the sounds of it, he's not changed in those 3 months. He's still doing the same task. So that's been a problem for Kalani, and she's talking to her mom, and she doesn't see the point of being married anymore. This is kind of where she leaves it.
Yeah. And I feel like we had some foreshadowing back in the early episodes of the season where Swelu wanted to take his kids to Samoa with the measles outbreak. And right then and there, we should have probably known that he's not handling the COVID-19 situation as well as he should. But yeah, I do feel bad for Kalani here because you can tell that she wants this to work because she has two kids with him. I mean, she's not going to be in a terrible situation if they were to break up, but obviously it's not ideal. So she's trying as hard as she can. But when Asuelu does this shady business and is lying to her about where she's going and treating her like she's the mom and he's the kid, it's not really the best dynamic for a healthy relationship. So I do not blame Kalani in the slightest for sending him back to his mom's. And this has to be, it was 3 months after the last one. So I would expect this is probably like April, May-ish. I do think it's kind of, I guess maybe funny in a way, not really though, but his mom does live in Washington. And that, if we remember back to early coronavirus times, that was not the place to be. So her sending him to Washington is kind of savage, but I don't blame her.
Yeah. Where else could she send him at that?
Exactly.
I think at that point, like she's picked the right place. But honestly, ultimately, all I can think of is the fact that Asuelu, you know, my initial take on him before we saw kind of the maturity come through in Washington and then a little bit again in this meeting is that he is a man child. And the fact that he has no understanding of the fact that, hey, measles, scary for your children. Coronavirus, COVID, dangerous for you and your children and your family. It's just this negligence that I don't think can be forgiven, especially when, like, it's not even like he's in a, you know, he's in a community or in a circle where everyone is, you know, of the same mind. His wife is saying, this is my opinion. This is what we should be doing. Probably her family is saying this, echoing the same sentiment. So it's just negligence to me. And I get Asuelu's whole thing of he needs an escape from all the stuff, but you just can't have what you want sometimes. And there are compromises you can make and there's compromises you don't make. You do not compromise fatherhood for volleyball. I feel like you just don't do that. And I don't think he can grasp it still. And it's sad. And I honestly don't even know if I see them being together moving forward. I imagine that if there's a couple that's going to try, it's them. Because it's very obvious that Kalani is not of the mindset to be like, I want to start new. I think she wants to do as much as she can try, as much as she can push herself. She wants to make it work with him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just feel bad for Kalani here. I really would like them to work out. I mean, I wish Asuelu could go back to just the season 6 of regular 90-day Asuelu, where his boo hole hurt and that's it. But we've kind of evolved into this not so great version of Asuelu. And I just, unless he completely changes his mindset, I don't think that it's really going to work out for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm worried, but we'll have to look at it moving forward. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm completely, because like there's some couples that I'm just tired of seeing on 90 day now. Like I would like for them to move on and for a new batch to come through. I could tolerate one more season of them to see where they go and to see if Asuelu does evolve into the next stage of husband, father, man, etc.
But yeah, I think wait a couple years, hopefully, and maybe in 2 years, if they're still together, then maybe at least.
Yeah,
he probably did something to change, and that's why they're still together. So maybe put them on like happily ever after season 9 or something.
I would be okay with that. I think that kind of would be the best landing spot for them. Maybe we have a newfound love for them once more as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. I am excited for Kalani's sister throwing down with Tammy, though. I'm very excited for that at all.
Oh yeah, that should be good.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Last but not least, Mina, we're at the end already with the final couple of the hour. And that is, of course, Elizabeth and Andre.
Oh, so,
last time we left this lovely couple, they were getting married. They got married. We're at the reception and they're having a good time. Everyone's having a good time, except for Charlie, the belligerent idiot, who is just causing havoc at his own sister's wedding. Just completely causing havoc at his own sister's wedding and just being problematic. He takes the mic when they're giving toasts and kind of craps all over Andre in his home country, in front of his family. Luckily for him, not everyone can speak English at the event, so not many people were outraged, but the ones that were very irritated. So we get left with Andre taking Charlie outside to talk to him there, and then we swiftly get brought back here to start this episode with them. So what happens is Andre basically says, hey, listen, be civil. I've said I'm going to be on my good best behavior today. I want you to do the same. We might not even be, we don't need to be friends tonight. Hell, we might not even be friends for life, but we need to put a ceasefire tonight. And he does this first move. Okay. So the next we see Charlie being talked to by Marcel, by Jen, by Libby, by Chuck. Nothing's getting through this guy's thick head. So before I proceed any further, tell me your thoughts about Charlie throughout this episode and the last episode, since I didn't get your take on this wedding yet.
Yeah. So first of all, this wedding has been going on for two episodes now, and I feel like so I attended the wedding because I've seen so many segments of it. I feel like I can tell you exactly how it was laid out and everything. But as far as Charlie goes, oh man, I feel like Charlie, I just know what's happening in Charlie's mind. He's drinking his alcohol, his liquor, and then every time that he puts that glass down, he looks around at the environment and he's like, who paid for this venue? My dad. Oh no, Andre, where's Andre? And that's what's happening every time. He's just, yeah. Especially this episode, it was just spinning in circles of just Charlie being mad. Charlie's mad. He's talking to this person. Oh, look, he's drinking again. He's mad. Oh, it was just the same thing over and over and over. And well, I kind of get where Charlie is coming from. From his point of view, I can see how it would suck to see your sister and her crappy husband having this large, extravagant wedding. Mm-hmm. When you probably didn't really have that at all. But I mean, it is a little bit of a different circumstance, and the wedding is not the time to bring up how much you are unhappy with how much was spent on the wedding and how you clearly he's not thinking straight because he's drunk and he's kind of ruining the whole wedding as it seems. But then we see little segments where they're still dancing and having fun. So it seems like maybe he's ruining the wedding for Libby's family and maybe Libby and Andre a little bit, but everybody else seems okay.
Yeah. For the most part, everyone else seems fine, which is great because the last thing you need is this kind of nonsense at your wedding. Like, really. Like, I'm supposed to not be diffusing problems like this. I already had so much going to planning this. I don't have to deal with this nonsense. So then Andre does something that I did not expect to see. He goes over, gets Chuck. They're outside with Elizabeth, who Elizabeth's getting mad at Andre, which I didn't appreciate. I was like, I think you're in the wrong here. Fine. So Andre basically tells Chuck, you know, I'm sorry for how our relationship has been till this point. I respect you. I love that you support your family and that you, you know, are always there for them. I want us to bury the hatchet. And they agree to do that. And, you know, Chuck's like, I'm a family man. I'm always going to be like rooting for Libby. And I want you guys to have as strong a family as possible. And I'm going to help when I can help. And they agree to move forward together, you know, in a positive direction. The one thing Andre says is, I need you to go sort out your son. That's like the one activity you need to take care of. So then this conversation happens, which I thought incredible. Again, I can only speak positively about Andre in the last couple of episodes, amazingly.
Yeah, shocking.
I know. I never thought I'd be in a place where I'd be rooting for Andre. Never. So then he walks away and Chuck is talking to the camera. And Chuck's like, yeah, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, like he got kicked out of his own country. He did this. He did that. I'm like, you just don't want this guy in your life. Like, don't act like there's still stuff to determine. He's clearly putting in an effort that's very visible, and you're refusing to accept it all the way. You just are.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I like you said, I really hate that Libby is aggressively talking to Andre, saying, you need to make sure that you get along with my family. And he is getting along with her family. What are you talking about? He, if anything, you need to go talk to Charlie about his behavior, because I feel like Andre has acted almost perfect at this wedding, which is very surprising to me. I never thought I would utter that sentence, but he's doing great. And then Libby and Chuck, you can tell even when he has that conversation with Chuck at first, you can tell that Chuck is trying to be a little defensive about it. But then he's like, because Andre starts to say sorry, and Chuck's like, you know, I'm a family man. All you had to do is come talk to me. I'm a family man. And it's, sure, Chuck, you're a family man, but your rap sheet says otherwise. But anyway, so I do like what Andre is doing here. The family, they're okay. I like that Chuck eventually kind of accepts the apology and they want to move forward. But they're saying this after they've probably been drinking all day at a wedding. So we'll see what happens when they get back to America.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. And then the one other thing that happens in the middle of all this is Libby and Andre have their own conversation. He fills her in on what happened with her dad and says, like, so, you know, I talked with him. We buried the hatchet. I apologize. And then, you know, she gets happy about it. You know, she's good with it. And then the kind of like, it's a nice ending to the story from what we saw, because then they're kind of speaking on that. They're like, this wedding is amazing. And my favorite scene of the night was when Andre's like, yeah, and there's a broke bum named Charlie who drank all the alcohol. And then she's like, are you talking about Charlie? Oh my God. And he's like, oh my God, what a bum. What a bum. And he just starts laughing about it. So I'm very happy that he is starting to be cheerful. I think he's definitely going to come through and be better. I do think that he has the correct assessment of, I'm good with your dad. I just don't know if me and your sister and your brother are ever going to repair things, because we've seen it time and time again this season that they're actively rooting against him, and they'll do anything to like try and like shake it up with him. So I don't think that's salvageable by any means, but I do like that. I think her whole sadness is she just wants her family to get along together. And as long as that happens, she's happy. But maybe the sad reality is that your brother and your sister need attitude checks so that everyone is good moving forward.
Yeah, her brother and sister, they literally came to the wedding purposely trying to hate on it. Yes. And that's not the right mindset to have when you're going to, especially a sibling's wedding or any wedding period. Mm-hmm. So I can see how that relationship between Andre and Libby's siblings is probably, it might not ever be salvageable, but maybe down the road, far, far, far down the road it is. Yeah. But maybe once he has Chuck in his corner, maybe that will help out a little bit, because it does seem like the family just goes home and probably trash talks Andre for hours every day. So I don't know. I would like to see them get along a little better. But at the same time, I do remember Andre from earlier seasons, and he is not always the most pleasant person. So I can see where this is just a momentary thing, and then it just goes right back down the gutter.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right? It's like, for all we're speaking praises of Andre, we're watching a episodic television show, which is portraying him as such. He's got a redemption arc of what, worth maybe 200 minutes. That's nothing compared to a lifelong thing. So we'll have to see in the tell-all how it's been since, and if everything's okay now. Then I'll be more positive about it. But this is the first time in the history of having Libby and Andre on the show where I'm like, I'm actually happy to see Andre. So let's see if my opinions change on this come to the tell-all. So yeah. On that note, we're done. We're over with everything that was done here. Let me quickly scroll scroll my notes to make sure that we didn't leave anything out. No, we did not. Mina, this was incredible. Thank you so much for being here with me. I hope you enjoyed your time talking about 90 Day.
Oh, of course.
And I'm. This is not going to be the end of it, because, you know, we have the 3-part tell-all, then we have The Other Way coming back. It's 90 Day. It's round the clock. It's all the time. But where can people find you for any anything you might have to say about the show or other shows?
Yeah. So on Twitter, I am at It's Mina W. So ITSMINAW. And yeah, if you would like to be my 23rd follower, I mean, get on that.
Boom. Get the Michael Jordan number in.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Got a lot to look forward to.
You can find me on all major social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, Puyaism for all three. I am currently not only podcasting about 90 Day, of course, Big Brother season still going strong. You can find me doing the live feed updates on Fridays and any other shows here and there. And Masked Singer coming back. We've got season 4 premiering Wednesday, September 23rd, which can only mean that me and Liana will be back again talking about all the nonsense over there with the Masked Singer. Are you a Masked Singer fan/viewer?
You know what? I wasn't, but then last season I did get into it because I wanted to listen to your podcast with Liana. Aww. Because you guys are, I stan you as a duo. So yeah, I will definitely be checking that out.
That's amazing. That's actually, you can't see it. The smile on my face is way bigger than any smile on any couple's faces during this finale, right?
Thank well, you that's that. Not saying a whole lot, but okay, cool.
Okay. And then, what was it? Yeah. So that's coming back. So every week we'll be back to talk about that, break everything down there. And, if you would please leave a rating or review for this podcast, it helps immensely. And it really allows me to both see feedback and see growth in the podcast, which is always appreciated. You can do so at robasawebsite.com/90dayfiance. One word, the 90 is numerical. So 90dayfiance. That would be very much appreciated, of course. And we have nothing for you anymore today, but be sure to come back next week when we kickstart the 3-part tell-all spectacular, starting part 1 next week. Until then, take care, get off the Hot Mess Express, and we will see you next time.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.